Good morning and welcome to ASI's Tuesday Morning Show, where ASI's most outspoken editors talk promo products. I'm Melinda Lagos, editor-in-chief of ASI's magazines, and we are here broadcasting live from ASI Chicago. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Melinda.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We've got some special guests here. Tim Andrews, CEO and president of ASI, is here. Happy to have you with us, Tim.
Great to be here, Melinda. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. We have Larry Bassinet, who is Executive Director of Research. Larry's going to be talking about the Counselor State of the Industry report hot off the presses today. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Melinda.
And, we have Senior Writer Dave Vagnoni here. Dave, how are you this morning?
I'm great. This is my favorite show in Chicago, so I'm excited to be here.
Okay, we're happy to have you. And Nicole Rollander, who is Editor of Stitches Magazine and Director of Education, is here. Nicole, how are you this morning?
I'm great. We're really excited about education at the show today.
Education.
Education, yeah. I'm stumbling over my words with my four cups of coffee here.
Well, today, of course, is Education Day in Chicago. There's a lot on tap, a lot of new things. I know we've got 35 new classes, 9 new speakers here at ASI Chicago. Nicole, what are some of the highlights for today?
Well, ASI Education is sponsored by Fields. We're really excited about our wearables track. We have a whole new lineup. We have 3
brand
new speakers.
New.
Absolutely. And we're really excited. We have the Ultimate Wearables Crash Course. It's a 2-hour boot camp, and people who attend will get a bag of wearable samples, but it's going to be a really dynamic track, so we think people should attend.
And if you've ever wanted to know anything about selling wearables, this is
you're
a gonna great
know. You're
crash
gonna know
course.
Afterward. Yeah, okay. Our whole track is geared towards selling wearables, really ramping up your sales. We're also excited about the $1 Million Sales Summit. That's sponsored by Logo Mats and PrintingForLess.com, and that's at 2:00 today, and that is for $1 Million sellers. And it's a special summit where we share tips. We have a lot of networking. We're really excited about that as well.
Yes, I know there's a reception from 4 to
5
afterwards where $1 Million salespeople can network with some of the best suppliers in the industry.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a not-miss event.
Right.
All right. Well, thanks, Nicole. Why don't you tell us what else is on tap for today's show?
Okay, Melinda, we've got a great show lined up for today. Dave's got some insider sales tips from big companies. I'll give you some hot decorating tips and T-shirt trends. Melinda's got the skinny on cold calling. Tim's going to clue you in on the top meeting mistakes, and Larry has some fun Save the Industry tips. Now we go to Dave for the industry news.
Well, thanks, Nicole. Good morning again, everyone, and hello from Chicago. We begin today with the expansion of supplier ThermoServe, which acquired Texas company Mug World on Friday. Through the deal, ThermoServe will now offer a full line of specialty drinkware, including collegiate and military licensed products. Next up is news from Rohde & Royce, which has granted a temporary license to market and sell its products to supplier Zarel International. The move comes after In Your Face Apparel ended its licensing agreement with Rohde & Royce, deciding to focus instead on its core business. Zarel is accepting Rohde & Royce orders as of now. We continue with welcome news from a surprising source. Walmart Sam's Club has introduced a pilot program offering discounted loans to small businesses through a deal with lender Superior Financial Group. Sam's Club members can apply for loans of up to $25,000 and receive better terms and interest rates than a bank could normally provide. All the loans will be backed by the U.S. Small Business Administration. Finally, be sure to check out ASI Show Update from right here in Chicago if you want interviews, video updates, Tim's Take, fashion finds, and, of course, the Joe Show. We have it all with ASI Show Update on ASICentral.com and in Counselor Promogram. Look for that starting tomorrow. And that's the industry news on Education Day at ASI Chicago, July 13th, 2010.
Thanks, Dave. And, of course, you can check out more industry news in today's Promogram. And we're also going to have special show editions of Promogram tomorrow and on Thursday. So check out that. All right. Well, we talked about State of the Industry. It's a mammoth research report that Counselor does every year and puts out a special issue in mid-July that's just hitting the stands right now. Actually, not the stands, people's desks. Larry, you've made a...
We'll put up stands here in Chicago.
We can stand, we can sit, we can do anything, Melinda.
Thank you. Larry, you're the research behind the report.
He's the massive mind.
You are.
Behind the massive research.
The brain. Think tank.
What are some...
I like that term.
A one-man think tank.
Right.
What are some interesting things this year revealed by the State of the Industry?
What we saw in this year's State of the Industry is the expansion of the health medical hospital market. It's always been big, mm-hmm. but it was up 50% where it was in 2008.
That's the number one industry.
That's the
for
number
sales
one
now.
Industry for sales right now. It's 15% of our industry, so it's over $3 billion. And it's gone up every year the last 3 years. So we would expect that to continue.
That's great. Tim, do you see a lot of distributors and suppliers talking about the healthcare market?
It's a big market, and I think it's really interesting because it's up over $1 billion. Is that right?
Last year? Yes.
Which really makes up, more than makes up, what we think we lost in the industry in pharmaceutical sales. Because when the pharmaceutical industry changed some of the rules about how much, how many promotional products people could use, or you know that pharmaceutical companies could use, that was about $1 billion in lost sales or something, I think. So the hospitals and other kinds of healthcare facilities are picking up some of that slack there. So someone's calling on a pharmaceutical, they can now shift their focus and use their expertise in those local healthcare providers, doctors, other kinds of people that are trying to find their own customers. You know, it's a very aggressive market out there. And even I know I went to see my physician, and he had promotional products for himself that he was giving out and was going to health fairs and other kinds of things. So I think there's a lot of people out there that are looking for business, and doctors are, you know, one of the markets you could tap into.
Absolutely right. Pharmaceuticals went from 10% of our market in 2006 when the new laws went down to 1% last year. Wow. So it's been a dramatic impact.
Well, it's nice to see a healthy, growing market out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the one thing that was really great this year was the sale of hand sanitizers. I think we saw earlier at the beginning of the year that because of the swine flu scare, people were using those as promotional products. And, in fact, searches in ESP for hand sanitizers rose almost to the level of searches for pens, if you can believe it, which pens obviously are the number one product in the industry. So that's, I think, one product that in that area that's really fueling the growth.
The sales of health-related products was up 3 or 4%. Last year, and that's up when everything else was down for the most part. So it was really, in terms of how much of the industry, it went up dramatically.
Big swing.
All right. Well, Dave, a lot of people ask us how to sell to CEOs and, you know, how to penetrate the Fortune 500 market. And you've got some tips for us today.
Yeah, and these are coming from really large companies, managers at really large companies like Coca-Cola, UPS, and Dell. And the first tip is dare to be different, whether it's a marketing campaign, a selling strategy, your approach to your supply chain. If you can create buzz and get people talking, that gets the attention, gets the big players to look at you a little more, and that certainly brings in money for your company. The second tip is be realistic with your RFPs. If you offer a quote that's too low, experienced managers look at that and say, it's too good to be true. They'll never deliver any kind of quality, so you have to be realistic with the offers that you're providing. And the third tip is to do your homework. Get to know these companies in advance. Don't go into a proposal with, you know, sort of shaky information. You have to know exactly who you're selling to, and also be sure you know the industry partners that you're working with. They have to be able to sell safe products. That's a huge buzzword right now in the industry, and across any industry, is the idea of safety with your products. You have to have a quality reputation in the partner that you're seeking from. And I'm not a big company, but one tip that I would add, if you want to try to be bigger, is use social networking. The evidence continues to show if you use social networking, it can lead to increased sales. And I have a session that I'm moderating this afternoon that will sort of link the two together as far as social networking and jumping up your sales. So those are some tips from large companies and their CEOs.
Dave, that was a shameless plug for your own activity.
I just want people to be educated in the industry, Tim. So I'll be sure to see you there, right?
Absolutely. One thing that I think distributors should think about, too, is when they're calling on their clients, ask their clients, you know, who are you trying to reach?
Mm-hmm.
So, Dave, if I'm calling on you and you're one of my clients and I'm a distributor, you know, who are you trying to reach? And then help you create a strategy so that you can use promotional products to get into those offices.
Personalize your approach.
Exactly. So if I'm calling on, let's say I'm calling on Coca-Cola, and Coca-Cola says they're trying to get into certain CEOs or whatever, how do I help them as a distributor get into those CEOs to create really, you know, compelling packages of promotional items that really stand out when they're delivered to the end buyer? So it's really something that a distributor can bring to the table when they're talking to their end buyers. How are they trying to find customers, too? Because everyone's looking for a customer today.
I think that goes back to doing your homework, sort of knowing in advance maybe where they want to focus market-wise, and then you could present something up front. They don't have to worry about going to somebody else. Hey, I can provide it for you right now. Here are the options I can give you. And it certainly puts you in a positive light.
I get a tremendous number of people trying to reach me, obviously, to sell things to ASI. And it's amazing to me the number of people that don't do even the most basic research. Yeah. They can get me on the telephone sometimes, and they haven't even looked at the ASI website to know what we do in the industry. And so it's very simple today, you know, compared to, say, 10 years ago to get information. And so if you're calling on someone, you've got to make some of those basic things, because it's not really a cold call. You know, you should be pretty warmed up by the time you get the person on the telephone.
And Tim, they should be finding information out about you so they can make a personal connection. You're more likely to listen to somebody if they know something about you.
Absolutely.
As compared to just getting on the phone and saying, hi, can I sell you a product? It certainly makes sense.
Now, Tim, you've worked for all size companies, including very large ones. Are there secrets to getting into a large company as opposed to a small one? Any tricks that you would suggest?
I think know the person's business, you know, to the extent that you can find out something, you know, and then try to figure out, you know, if there's a personal connection you can make, even if it's a bit of a stretch. You know, I had someone approach me a couple of weeks ago, and they, you know, they actually got to me, which is not easy to do sometimes. I've got a great gatekeeper. My assistant, Donna, is a great gatekeeper. But this person happened to notice on my LinkedIn profile that I went to Ball State University. This person knew someone who had gone to Ball State, did a little basic research about the university, and actually sent me a promotional item from Ball State as a way to get me to return their phone call. And so I returned that call. So I think, you know, really, you know, getting in there and not trying to contact 10 people or 1,000 people, but figure out who are the real likely suspects that would buy your product or your service, and then really trying to, you know, do something personal to get to them.
Well, those are great tips. We're going to pause right now for a message from today's show sponsor, I Promote You. And when we return, Nicole's going to talk about hot decorating and fabric tips.
This portion of ASI Radio is sponsored by I Promote You. Distributors and salespeople, consider affiliating with I Promote You today. Be more productive, be more profitable, be happier, and retain your independence. I Promote You, the smart choice. For more information, call 800-850-3370 or email opportunities@ipromoteyou.com.
Welcome back to ASI's Tuesday Morning Show. We're broadcasting to you live today from ASI Chicago Education Day. In a few minutes, we're going to talk about some great new cold calling techniques. But first, Nicole Rollander is going to talk about hot decorating and fabric tips. Nicole, what's hot in decorating and fabric?
All right. Well, these are going to be in Stitches July, so this is a sneak preview. So if you're looking for an eco-friendly alternative to organic cotton or bamboo, try hemp.
Hemp.
It needs less water to grow than cotton. It requires no pesticides, and it's actually very breathable and also very durable. A lot of the outdoor survival gear and some of the best stuff is made out of hemp, which is pretty cool. And hemp can be really smooth and luxe if you have 100% hemp viscose, but it can also be textured and a little bit rough if it's a cotton hemp blend, which is cool because you can kind of get the effect that you want.
And Nicole, we have all men on the panel besides you and I. So let's have anyone on the panel worn hemp before?
I have not worn hemp,
not the hemp
but
bracelets.
I like lightweight, you know, sort of clothing, especially for the summertime.
And you're very rustic and outdoorsy.
I am very outdoorsy.
You wear the textured hemp there in your survival treks. But it's also very cool because there are hemp tees that are very light and breathable, and they're eco-friendly. And they can be embroidered, screen-printed with discharge or water-based ink, so it's a little bit more eco-friendly, screen-printed or tie-dyed. You can have the whole batik look, too, so if you want to get you know, a little bit ethnic, that's a trend that's hot right now. So hemp is a good alternative.
You know, and I think they've made improvements because when I first saw garments made of hemp, they were kind of itchy.
Real rough, like in the 90s, remember those jackets?
Right, I think now you would be very surprised at what you see. That's great. Well, give us another trend.
All right. So let's talk about what's hot in denim. What's pretty cool is that in the industry, we see a lot of distress worn in washes and lots of appliques and patches on caps, bags, and jeans. And there are actually a lot of fashionable jeans in this industry now, which is really cool. We've been looking at some of those for Stitches. And suppliers are also actually making denim more functional as well. They're water-resistant and flame-resistant denim.
Right, so it's
functional. I mean, it looks good, like the carpenter kind of style jeans for men, but they're functional, and so they can be worn in situations where you have, you know, workers outside or in construction. Mm. And, you know, they might have applique patches on them as well. Another tip is to consider embossing or debossing your apparel. So embossing pushes an image above the fabric surface, so it's sort of like a mountain, and then debossing pushes an image down below the fabric, so it's a valley. And it creates really cool 3D effects. It's actually pretty cost-effective, too. And so bold artwork is best. You know, it has a lot of black and white clean lines. And the process is done on stretchy garments, which is almost anything like cotton, knits, wovens, denim. And you can combine embossing with embroidery and screen printing for an even cooler effect. But it's actually more cost-effective than embroidery. So
I have a cool fleece jacket that I really like that's been debossed. And it's really, I think they used a laser to sort of, you know, make the image. And it really is cool because it you can see it and it stands out, but it's not so pronounced that it's you know, sort of odd. You
know? It's that tonal look, so it's maybe a little bit darker.
Really
so
cool.
It's not,
Yeah, it's really nice.
So if you're looking for a garment with a more understated logo, that might be...
Yeah, and actually, we've seen a lot of nonprofits, you know, they want to give away pieces for their donors. And so say it's like a $250 donation, they'll get a really cool eco-friendly fleece vest or jacket, and they'll, you know, emboss or deboss or laser etch whatever their logo onto the back. And it's a very, you know, standout piece, and people donate for that.
Now's the time to be talking about fleece, too, because, of course, it's summertime, so it's hot here in Chicago. But, you know, soon we'll be into fall. So if you're a distributor out there, you know, selling, I think now's the time to start talking about fleece and sort of fall gear.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you have it. Thanks, Nicole. Larry, we're back to you for the fun state of the industry fact number two. You talked about healthcare. What else do you have for us?
I'm going to follow up on something Nicole was just discussing about the green market and hemp. We found that almost two-thirds of suppliers are either currently offering green products or they're in the process of developing them.
That's great.
This isn't something that was a fad for a couple of years and going away. There's mm-hmm. some serious financial commitment, some capital investment in getting green products out there. And I thought that was a very exciting trend, and I hope that continues.
Absolutely. Do you all see more green products being sold in the industry right now?
I think so, because at the corporate level, the requirements are such where you almost have to offer eco-friendly options. And that's, I think, a great way for distributors to get sales. I think the time is now. It's not necessarily a trend. The future is now when it comes to eco-friendly products.
Also, one trend with eco, I think, is that we're seeing some of the prices start moderating. And so
finally,
while there was, you know, a 10 or 15 or 20% gap between something that was traditionally eco-friendly or considered eco-friendly to a basic product, that gap is narrowing, and so while there still may be a bit of a premium on an eco-friendly or a green product or environmentally friendly, that gap is narrowing, and so I think that's going to help distributors a lot, because if suppliers can, you know, do a good job delivering product at a good price point, then I think the selection will be the selection of green over something else. The price point, I think, in the last 18 months has been tough because people didn't really want to pay another 10 or 15%, or they were very hesitant to because of the economy. But now the economy's coming back, prices are coming down on eco-friendly, so I think we're going to have a nice little match in the next few months.
Yeah, and on the decorating side, too, which is great. I mentioned water-based things, but we're also seeing, even with embroidery, eco-friendly backings and even organic cotton thread. So, you know, you can even get down to the real nitty-gritty there, and we're seeing a lot of cool stuff.
Nitty-gritty.
That's great. All right, well, we talked a little bit earlier about cold calling, and I know Dave and Tim gave some tips. So we're going to give some more now. Apparently, Inc. magazine just did an article identifying David Rosen as the happiest cold caller in America. He's someone who is a wine broker and has developed a lot of strategies to be really successful with cold calling. The first strategy, he said, is there's no such thing as a wrong number. He gets a lot of wrong number calls to his business, and he actually sells some of those people. So, you know, don't hang up the phone with anyone. If someone calls you, talk to them about your business, whether they intended to speak to you or not. Another one is one that Tim already talked about a little bit, and that is to, you know, do some research about, you know, warm up every cold call, do some research about the person that you're going to call, not just on the company, but I think Tim mentioned this too, on the actual person. Sometimes if he sees a picture of the person, he'll kind of know, you know, how old they are. Well, that might affect how he's going to talk to them, things like that. You know, of course, social networking, which Dave mentioned, is a good tactic too. Gatekeepers are to be respected. We've talked about it a lot, you know, that on the show a lot. Obviously, if you can make a gatekeeper your ally, you're going to, you know, get some, get an in there. And another thing that he does, which I thought is interesting, is, you know, to have a script, know what you're going to say, but obviously do not read the script. Have you ever had cold calls from people who are obviously reading a script?
Hang up.
Yeah.
So memorize it, but then be able to think on your feet and be, you know, flexible with it and make it sound authentic. So those are some tips from David Rosen. Do you guys have any others?
I would throw in one, which is don't lie, because, you know, the number of calls that we get in my office that they don't get to me, but they get to Donna, is, you know, they lie.
Mm-hmm.
They say,
yeah,
Tim told me to call today at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
I knew Tim. I talked to Tim. I saw Tim yesterday. You know, they're just now and out lie. And so, one, she catches that really fast because
right,
she knows what's going on. But two, that just leaves a sour taste in someone's mouth. I would never do business with someone who lied to me to get to me.
Right.
And so I think that is another really, it seems like an obvious don't, but I think a lot of people do.
Absolutely. I think so, too. Well, in this guy, Dave Rosen's tips for getting past the gatekeeper is, in other words, you know, befriend them. Tell them how they can help their boss and just be really nice and say, hey, what's a good time to reach him? Can you help me out here? You know, just be courteous and businesslike, and
sure,
you have a better chance.
Another idea is to send a promo product in advance to sort of warm up the call before you actually make the call. I know a company that sent out those candy hearts for Valentine's Day. Companies received them. She followed up with phone calls, had a lot more success as compared to just making the traditional cold call.
Yeah, absolutely. And as Tim said, you know, someone found out you went to Ball State, you know, took a little time to find that out and send you a promo product, and you did call them back.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. Well, Dave is going to talk to us about the new meaning of luxury.
Yes, the lap
luxury
of luxury
is not what it used to be. People are buying luxury goods, but they're not, you know, maybe Mercedes's and other things.
Exactly. Americans are changing their buying habits. The idea of luxury is different than it used to be. That's the bottom line. So I'll give you an example. Instead of buying an expensive car, people would more likely buy an expensive grill so they could, you know, grill some healthier meals for themselves. Still, you know, a $5,000-$6,000 grill, but it's not the Mercedes, for example. Another idea or another thought, people are still buying Coach bags, but instead of buying at the retail store, they're more likely to go to the outlets and get a Coach bag. It's still a Coach bag. It's still a real Coach bag, but they're not buying it at that high-end price. And also, large electronics, people are waiting for discounts and sales, especially around the holidays. With the exception of iPhones, where people rush to the stores, or iPads, larger electronics, people are really waiting and looking for the discount. So the translation to our industry is you could still send or still try to sell high-end products, but you have to explain the value and describe why it's a luxury item up front. And that's a way to stand out from the competition. Hey, I can offer you this luxury item. I can help you stand out from your competition. Here's the value that I can provide you.
Great. Thanks, Dave. Nicole, we're back to you. You talked about some fabric trends. I know you have some trends in T-shirts that distributors can sell right now.
Yeah, I mean, T-shirts are always hot. And, you know, it's funny, when you think about a T-shirt, you think of, like, these oversized pieces. But there's so many cool options out there. I mean, we've seen these light, slim cuts come into vogue, and you know, there are nicer silhouettes. So those are still popular. But I think there's also a trend like we see in retail toward this kind of boyfriend, like the jackets and stuff. So we're starting to see more boyfriend tees. So they're a little bit looser fitting, but they're trending. They have like the V-necks, and they're for men and women as well. So that's kind of cool. And there's also this kind of move toward viscose, which is the lighter, more breathable pieces. So they're looser, but they still kind of form fit the body. All-over prints are still all over the rage. I was actually in the store recently, and I was looking at Ed Hardy jeans, and there were skulls, you know, screen-printed on the butts, and there were, like, these large embroidered appliques. I mean, it was really cool, you know, the foil prints. And so we're seeing that a lot in our industry. So buyers want foil treatments, discharge inks, and very large imprints. And, you know, decorators can accommodate that, so you can really, you know, push the envelope. The other thing that's cool that we've seen more of is actually written, you know, text images. And so there's a lot of vertical, you know, company names and logos. And so instead of images, people are actually using text for their designs. Neons and bright colors are still hot, but actually darker colors like chocolate browns, darker blues, reds, and burgundies are coming more into vogue as well. So those kind of traditional colors are more popular. And finally, we're seeing some cool stuff like we always see multimedia like embroidery and screen printing, but we're also seeing raised metallic lettering, like actual metal that's, you know, you can get your company name put in over printing. So there's a lot of cool stuff in tees, stuff that I would actually wear.
Well, thanks, Nicole. You can read more about this in the July issue of Stitches. Now let's ask our male panelists here. Do any of you own a pair of Ed Hardy jeans with skulls on the butt?
I'm going to run right out and get some now that I heard that.
I meant to get some, and they were sold out because they're just moving so quickly.
Well, they're a hot item. You better hurry.
They're a hot
hurry,
item.
Do women like that is the more important question.
I think Nicole probably does.
I do. But, you know, also, speaking of Ed Hardy jeans, they were also very distressed and washed out.
Yeah.
So that's the denim.
Oddly enough, all
about.
My jeans are distressed, but in kind of a different way.
Well, Larry, it's still acceptable.
Okay.
You know, I liked Ed Hardy more before John Gosselin from John and Kate started wearing them in every photo he was in.
Right. That's why I didn't buy the skulls on the butt jeans. I really liked them, though, but I didn't buy them.
Now, Tim's wondering, who's John Gosselin?
No, I know who John is.
All right, Larry, we're back to you for a fun State of the Industry fact number 3. What else do you have for us?
We're going to do a quick little quiz. One of the most important parts of our industry is how fast orders can be turned around. And we have some statistics on that
okay.
I found pretty interesting. What percent of orders from distributors require a turnaround of 5 days or less? What would you think?
40.
60.
60? Tim?
I'd say 62.
62. And Dave?
57.
Oddly enough, it's just over a third. It's 35%.
Wow.
And it's been that for the last six, seven years, which I find remarkable that it's only that much because you hear so much about, I need this right now. What's the average turnaround time for a supplier's order from the time they get it to it's sent to the distributor?
10 days.
10? Melinda?
8.
8? Tim?
6.
6?
I'll agree with Melinda and say 8.
You're close. It's 12. Mm. It's 12.
So Nicole was closest.
Nicole was closest. And this is the last fun fact on this. What is suppliers' on-time shipping percentage? They think their shipping percentage.
3%. No.
No, no. How much? What percentage of their orders do they think they've shipped on time?
92%.
92? Okay. Melinda?
93.
97.
97?
I think the answer is actually 92.
Well, the answer for suppliers is what Tim said. It's 96%.
96. That's what they think. That's what the suppliers
distributors think. 92.
Distributors
now, what's
think
the distributor?
They think 92. It's not that far off.
No.
When we asked those questions, I thought there was going to be a big difference there, and those are really pretty close.
You know, I think Dave's cheating because he actually wrote part of the issue.
Okay.
Dave isn't cheating. He's just informed.
That, and I'm holding the table in front of me here.
I'm looking at it right now.
Well, I guess that's where it's coming from.
Eyes on your own paper, Vagnani.
I guess that's encouraging, though, that you know distributors and suppliers
they're pretty close,
are
yeah.
almost in line with that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you very much, Larry. Well, Tim, you're in a lot of meetings. So today you're going to talk about some meeting mistakes people make and hopefully give us some tips for holding better meetings.
Great. Yes, I would say that one of the biggest mistakes people make is they don't have an agenda before they go into a meeting. So I think a real to-do is what's the agenda going to be, and the agenda needs to be distributed to all the attendees that are coming to the meeting at least, say, a day in advance so they can start thinking about the topics, they can prepare. And it's really useful, I think, to also include any materials that people need to review beforehand. You know, there's nothing worse than walking into a meeting and having someone pass out a five-page memo, and now you're supposed to read the memo in the meeting to try to figure out what you're talking about. So have an agenda and then make sure the materials are sent around beforehand. I think another big meeting mistake is having them go on too long.
Oh, yes. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I agree.
You know, they can go on forever, and you never get anything accomplished, and, you know, things happen. So I think a good rule of thumb that I try to follow is no meeting should go more than 90 minutes. And, you know, if it starts going beyond 90 minutes, there's something wrong. Something's broken somewhere. So that's another rule. Also, I think don't have a meeting. A big mistake is to have a meeting without really a reason. You know,
right,
why
you
are
have,
we here?
Oh, this is the weekly blah, blah
right.
meeting.
Right. And, you know, it's better to just cancel the meeting.
Absolutely.
And, you know, let people, you know, find something else to do with their time that's more valuable. So that's a big mistake. I think another a meeting mistake is holding back. You know, you're in a meeting and you just know that you know some facts or you know something that's going to sort of maybe not be well received because maybe it's flying in the face of something somebody else is saying. But I think you ought to feel comfortable and confident to not hold back, because if you leave the meeting and you say to five people on your way out, gosh, you know, that's all wrong, everything was said in that meeting, well, then you really didn't have an effective meeting. I also think a meeting mistake is having a moderator who isn't really creating an inclusive environment. So you may have seven people in a meeting, and maybe three people are really big talkers and four people are kind of quiet. Well, it's the role of the moderator to bring those other four people in, because they may have something really important to say. So you may have to call on someone, you know, what's your opinion about that, et cetera. Melinda, what do you think about this topic or whatever? That's really important. So having a moderator who isn't doing their job.
And they also should cut off the over-talkers.
Absolutely.
Perhaps.
You have to moderate that, too. And then finally, I would say another big mistake is not ending the meeting with a recap
Absolutely.
Of what the to-dos are.
And action items to
Absolutely.
Follow up. Yeah.
And who's doing them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no confusion. We're going to do these four things as a result of this meeting. There's two more bits of information, and you're going to get, you know, Larry's going to find the information. Dave's going to come back with a planner and media and marketing. Nicole's going to come back with how we decorate on our shirts, whatever the to-dos are. So that's really, you know, I think some meeting mistakes and ways to solve those problems.
That's great. Thanks very much, Tim. All right, Dave, I know that curb appeal usually applies to houses when you're buying houses, but salespeople can do a lot to perfect their own personal curb appeal as well.
That is correct, and these ideas come from author Carol Goman. I'll give you five tips on how to improve your personal curb appeal. Number one is dress for success. You have to look the part. I'm of the opinion it's always better to overdress than underdress. You also want to look fashionable. Who's going to buy from someone that's out of fashion, looks out of sorts, or unkempt? You have to, number one, dress for success. Number two, maintain positive eye contact. This is something you can practice, and you don't even need to have a partner. You could just practice
look
in a mirror.
And
it does take practice. It's not something you could just start off and do in most cases. But if you're not looking at somebody, are they really going to be interested in what you have to say? You have to maintain eye contact. Number three is learn to speak the body language of inclusion. And this is one of these things where you don't want your feet to be turned away from the person that you're speaking to. You don't want to be a close talker, but you want to at least show that you're interested in what the other person has to say. And it helps in portraying your message. A couple other quick points. Use your head. This is a tip I learned back from my TV days. You have to nod when you're having a conversation with people to encourage them to give you feedback on what you have to say. So you're doing the nodding as they speak. You want them to nod as you're speaking, and it works both ways. And the fifth point is to activate your smile power. And you need to have the genuine smile, not the fake smile that people can read a mile away. Yeah, you want to
smiling now.
You want to be genuine. You want to show people. Yeah, thanks. As Tim gave us a strange face.
Really creepy.
You want to let people know that you have a positive outlook on whatever you're doing. You have to be positive. If you walk in with one of these so-so expressions, I'm not going to really be interested in what you have to say. But if you're genuine to me, you have a smile, yeah, this is a person I want to be around. So those are five tips to help you manage and improve your personal curb appeal.
I think genuine is important.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people really aren't genuine. They say whatever the script
right.
is they've memorized, and they really aren't reacting to your body language.
Right.
You know, if you walk into a room and someone looks like they're, you know, they've got to rush off somewhere, you shouldn't try to hold them in the room.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah, and smiling's important, and now everybody here is smiling. So
yeah,
and
you know, can I just add one other thing?
Yes.
Talking about scripts, you know, one of the things I hate when people call me and I have a courtesy call and they repeat back what I said, they go, so you're having a problem with blah, 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 like, and you know it's a script. I hate that. It's like, you don't need to repeat back what they say. You can, you know, work it into what you're saying, but that's just my peeve.
There you have it. All right, well, we're going to end off the show. We don't have Joe Haley's rant, but we have something almost as good. Some interesting news from Larry. You know, Dave Fagnoni is... he's engaged and getting married.
Congratulations,
so
thank you very much.
This next segment, I think, could be very
I will listen closely, Larry.
I think you should take
no
notes.
Pressure.
Notes
no
on
pressure.
This. I'll give you the notes after we're done, because I think you're going to find this particularly fascinating.
Go for it.
Instead of getting married in a church or a banquet hall, more couples are choosing their favorite retail spots as a place to have
their
wedding. Yes, apparently so, oddly enough.
And like Macy's?
Like Macy's, for example, or TJ Maxx.
Yes. One woman, I guess, got married in the size 8 shoe aisle of TJ Maxx because that was one of her favorite spots on earth. Is that right?
You
live the dream. Live the dream.
Yeah, but are they getting something out of it? Publicity? Something paid? Like,
what what they're getting out of it is one, it's a unique wedding because most people don't have their weddings at TJ Maxx or, in some cases, Taco Bell.
Yes.
So it's a very unique experience for them and for all their attendees. But it's also cheaper. And retail spots will often just let them do it without a charge, so they don't have to pay for a banquet hall. And then the retail spot gets some kind of publicity themselves out of it.
Well, apparently Home Depot even will take things off the shelves and Home use them as props for the wedding.
Another popular place,
free.
Home Depot. Exactly.
I'd
and they'll
do
it for
Depot
free.
Home Depot than Taco Bell. You know what I mean?
I think I would too.
This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of.
It's frightening.
I think it is dumb. I don't know who's doing this, but
so
they, should
saying that Dave,
they should have their heads examined.
So Dave shouldn't get married at Taco Bell?
No. How about Cold Stone Creamery? That'd be
come
fun.
Come on.
Oh, Cold Stone Creamery.
Say, okay,
that'd
wait. How about the idea of having an after party after your reception at Cold Stone Creamery?
It's too small. What are you going to have, like 5 people? I mean,
well, Dave doesn't
I'm
have that many friends.
I'm just trying to think outside the box.
No, Dave's got a lot more people coming to his wedding.
Well, none of you invited now. No,
I think I think the idea that thinking out of the box equates to going into a retail establishment to have a wedding is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
It's like getting married underwater.
Well, maybe you don't like the shoe section of TJ Maxx.
I just think you should be in a place that, you know, everyone's going to be comfortable and it's not sticky. You know, people have to look ahead. In 10 years, when you look at the photographs,
right?
You know, and the photographs are in a TJ Maxx or in a Cold Stone Creamery, what are you really going to think about?
How about at a museum or an aquarium
or
a stadium?
He's getting married at a museum. It's a trick question.
I think I think a museum is nice. Right. I think anything that is respectful location so that when you look back in 10 or 20 or 30 or 40, 50 years and you see the photographs, you don't want to be in a situation, in my opinion, where, you know, you're going to be embarrassed and you're going to think, where were we again and what were we doing? Oh, my gosh, we
smelling
were crazy.
Smelling beef tacos in people's used shoes or something.
What about themes like Star Wars or Star Trek? That's been big
for
some
time,
too.
That's slightly above the retail
That may be a little better. For, like, the reception, I think you can have fun at a reception. I think the ceremony is a serious ceremony. It's about a life event.
All right, bottom line, Tim, say you had to get married in a store. Which one would you pick?
Barney's, New York.
Okay, well, that has a little bit of...
Oh, that would look good on the invitation.
Or Anthropology. That would be nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we're all out of time today. Thanks very much for listening. Thanks to today's show sponsor, I Promote You. Be sure to tune in tomorrow and Wednesday when we have very special editions of the radio show.
With prizes
here in Chicago. Come out if you can. We're going to have a live audience. We're going to be at 9 Central Time both days. Mm-hmm. So be sure to check us out. Thanks, and have a great day.